Welcome back in, hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We're scheduled to be joined shortly by Matt Miller from ESPN. Looking forward to that conversation. We'll look ahead to the NFL draft getting underway tomorrow with him coming up here in just a few minutes. Matt Duchesne, Predator centerman, will join us at 8:45 for his weekly visit. Adam Vingan from The Athletic at 9:30 as well. And as always, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Let's go to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam in Portland text in, only three for the rest of time, and we pick Eric Church and Blink-182, and you're stuck with Jared telling you every 5 minutes about how he's right about Jadeveon Clowney. Oh my goodness, sounds like a Guantanamo Bay prison sentence.
That's pretty good. Heidi from Dixon, what food are the food fighters throwing?
Yes.
On brand.
Yes.
On brand.
Let's get back to the food fighters.
Greg A., one word, Metallica, you know.
They got some long songs,
Master of Puppets. Master of Puppets would be
pretty nice.
Any of their first four albums, actually, would be. That's a good call.
Well, and also, like, if you're looking to kill some time, Metallica, they can put some minutes on some songs.
No, especially, right. Especially pre, like, when they were good, their first four albums. Yes, especially then. I can't believe you just said Blink-182 to troll me, right?
I did.
Okay, good.
I mean, they're not like totally out of consideration, but I don't think they'd be in the top three. But if I'm with you, they're definitely going. I'm definitely bringing that album.
It's just you and Jared. So you might also want to think about, you know, if you really thought, like, what would really anger Jared? You know, could be the music you choose. I don't know what that would be, but I'm just saying.
Either. I don't know what type of a music guy Jared is.
When you got the takes he has, just prolific, just coming out of your mouth left and right, you don't have time for music.
Maybe so. Hey, whatever, man.
Did Jared leave? Is he gone?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think he's not, I don't see him in there.
We'll have to find out.
Derrick Henry push-ups.
That's right. I haven't seen any Derrick Henry workout videos in like 2 weeks. I think he's like taking some time to chill, or what's going on there? There's a mute.
Yep.
Got
there's one. Got that, Porth? I don't know. And I haven't seen anybody trying to outdo Derrick Henry either. So,
yeah.
I'm sure it won't be long. We'll get another one.
Oh, man. What a time. NFL offseason. Derrick Henry finding new ways to become more of a physical freak. Looking ahead at the draft here, I had Elijah Moore I selected in the first round. I traded back to do so. I'm very interested to see where he goes because – I think in this Pro Football Focus mock draft simulator kind of echoes it. Like, most of the times I do this simulator, he's still available at like 53. And I'm like, I don't think Elijah Moore is going to be available at 53. Could be wrong. I don't know. But it sounds more and more like he's going to be in the first round at some point, Elijah Moore.
Yeah, TD. TD took part in like the ESPN draft. He went Elijah Moore at 22.
At 22.
Now, Caroline Fenton, she also took part yesterday in an ESPN draft. Who'd she take? Do you remember?
In the KJZ, the yes. Keyshawn J. Will and Zubin. Yep. She took Aziz Ojulari.
That's right. She took Ojulari.
Ojulari.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ryan Porth's going to get an Ojulari jersey if they.
I might.
Hey.
And he might be number one, too.
Could be. Could wear whatever number he wants.
Yeah, he could be. Who knows? Someone's probably going to be number one. Or is every team going to have like a one now, a number one? Like
maybe.
In college, usually that's a receiver, typically.
Yeah, I would think so. The Titans have had a great number one in their history before. Gary Anderson, baby, he wore number one for the Titans. Made a great kick in Baltimore. That's a legendary number.
He's a heck of an all time player. And by the way, you know, speaking of the Pro Football Focus, like, they wouldn't let me draft a kicker. What's up with that?
No love for the kickers? I've not tried to draft one.
Yeah.
Don't even have it as an
it's
option.
It's not even an option.
Yeah, why is that? What's up with that?
Mm.
So no kickers, and Elijah Moore is going in the mid-50s.
Going in 58 overall.
For the first time ever, I have questions about Pro Football Focus. Until now, absolutely rock solid.
Every time I run this simulator, I mean, it's, you know, Jameen Davis out of Kentucky, he's projected to go like late first round, early second round. And every time I run the simulator, he's still available in like the fifth round. I'm like, I don't think he's going to be available in the fifth round.
They just didn't really like how he played against Auburn. They graded him very low in that game.
I guess so.
So, you know, they got their own evaluation.
Did you consider at all in this mock draft simulator that we've done? Did you consider taking a flyer on a quarterback late in the draft? I looked at who was available, and there were Felipe Franks was on the table, Sam Ehlinger out of Texas was on the table, and Ian Book from Notre Dame as well.
I would not waste time. I like Book and Ehlinger both in college. I would not waste time with either of them. I don't think either of them are going to be pro quarterbacks. I've said it. I might take a flyer on Felipe Franks.
Is that because of the arm strength? What is the reasoning for
it? Yeah, I mean, the dude's 6'7", 235 with a huge arm. He's athletic. And I do think he got better. I mean, I think he got better from Florida to Arkansas.
I agree.
So that'd be a guy that I could see. You know, I can see how he could develop into something at this level. I just don't think Book and Ehlinger are their college quarterbacks. They're good athletes. At one point last year, I was like, Book should be getting some Heisman love. He was fun to watch. Just running around, extending plays.
The first Clemson game, he was unbelievable in that game.
I mean, it was almost like a little bit Flutie-ish, some of the stuff he was doing, but I don't think he's an NFL quarterback. And it's the same thing for me with Ehlinger. It's hard with him, more so system, you know, to this. And sometimes you're wrong on that. Obviously, guys have come out of every system and become good NFL quarterbacks. I don't think he's good enough. But Franks, I mean, again, look at Franks. He's got a 4.59 40. Again, he can throw it a million yards. That's way down the list of things that really matter for NFL quarterbacks. But as a late pick, I would not completely dismiss that. He'd be the only one in that range that I look at and think that he has a shot.
I have confidence in this. If they ended up going that route and like picking Felipe Franks in the seventh round of the draft, he'd stick around longer than Cole McDonald would.
You would think so. You would think so.
He was here for about 48 hours.
Yeah. Like Cole McDonald, the funny thing is, after the draft last year, my two favorite interviews were Isaiah Wilson and Cole McDonald.
Yeah.
And they both, you know, didn't work out. So, I mean, like, what's good for the media is not always good for your football team.
Not always good for the football team at all. I mean, it's interesting. Like, where'd you get Josh Palmer in, like, the fourth round, fifth round in your draft?
Let me see here.
I think it was fifth.
I thought I got him at one. Let me see. Yeah, I got him. I got him at 166 all day.
It's gonna be very interesting to see where he goes. I mean, TD is really high on Josh Palmer. Jim Nagy, who we had on a few weeks ago, really high on Josh Palmer. He showed very well at the Senior Bowl. And look, it's difficult to judge him, I think, because the offense at Tennessee was so bad. I've seen some people have like a third round grade on Josh Palmer. I am very fascinated to see where he goes. I'm fascinated to see where Trey Smith goes as well out of Tennessee. Like there's not much to be proud of out of Tennessee and your prospects that you put in the NFL as of late. But those two guys, to me, not only are they intriguing to see where they could go, but I think both of them could be pretty good players at the NFL level too, especially Trey Smith.
Trey Smith is interesting. I actually thought he would grade out a little higher than he is. But you talk about someone you bring in and it would be a credit to your team, and I still think he's just a tremendous athlete. He could be a really good player. He could be a good value pick. Both of them could be. Brugler has Palmer 20th. He's got him as a fourth-round pick. I mean, I look at Palmer. So let's take Rashad Bateman. Rashad Bateman's a better player than Josh Palmer.
Yeah.
But you tell me Bateman's a first-rounder and Palmer's like a fifth-rounder?
Okay. I don't think it's that big of a gap.
I'll take the fifth-rounder.
Yeah.
You know, I'll take that value. And even going down the list with some of these guys, you mentioned Shai Smith. I mean, Seth Williams from Auburn. There's a lot of, I think, good players at that position. You can get in the middle rounds, and it's not that different from some of those guys right under the top three. Now, style is the question. I'm bullish on Rondale Moore. I do like Elijah Moore too. The Moores, I like them both a lot, and I think those guys, They're different. But in terms of like these outside receivers, Nico Collins, you know, Dwayne Eskridge from Western Michigan, another Western Michigan guy. He's another one of the smaller, fast guys, 4.39 40 guy. There's just a lot. There's a lot of depth at that position. Even going down to like Jonathan Adams, Arkansas State. I mean, he's a good player. You know, really good player. Trevon Grimes from Florida. We don't talk about him much. 6'4", 220 You know, 6'4", 220 4'4", 40 Dude, it's projected to be like a 6th round pick. So that position is loaded, and that's where, as a GM, you know, is it really worth going high for a guy? You better really love that player.
I'm probably not taking him at 22, but if the Titans decided to trade down and maybe Ojulari's off the table, maybe somebody sneaks up and gets Elijah Moore, maybe Newsom's gone at that point too. A guy that really intrigues me, Asante Samuel Jr. I mean, he's a little bit small. I mean, a little bit undersized. But that's really about it with him. I mean, the kid can flat out play. And, you know, TD talked about him last week. He was looking up some film of, I think, De'Ami Brown out of North Carolina and just kept going back to the game against Florida State. And Asante Samuel Jr. just was flashing over and over and over again, always around the ball. He, to me, is really intriguing. I'm not sure that I would take him at 22. Like, if the Titans stick at 22 and they're not trading back, I don't know that I would, you know, go after Asante Samuel Jr. in that spot. But if they traded down and that's who they ended up with, I'd probably be okay with that if I'm a Titans fan.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think he's – you want more size, you know, 5'10", 180, but aggressive, athletic, 4'3", 40, ball skills. That would not be a bad outcome at all. And the Titans have definitely demonstrated their interest in him through this process, along with a lot of other people. But he's on that list of guys, you know, they visited with and stuff like that. I mean, Elijah Molden from Washington's another guy, another smaller guy, you know, probably more of a slot corner profile, but he's a good player too. Yeah, this position also, you can get down into like Robert Rochelle. Again, I love these like small college Arkansas guys, Central Arkansas. A lot of people like him a lot. You know, the UCF guys. I mean, it goes pretty deep at corner too, even down to like a Sean Wade at Ohio State. Kind of a disappointing player at Ohio State, but you're still talking about a 6-foot, 200-pound, pretty good player, you know, that's like a 5th round grade.
It's been our Draft Outlook segment brought to you by Farm Bureau Health Plans and by Apple Collision Centers as well. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on the NFL Draft, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We are one day away from the first round of the NFL Draft. Who would you like to see the Titans take at 22? Would you like to see them trade back and move down in the draft? Would you like to see them trade up? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Pro Golf is coming to Nashville this May with the Simmons Bank Open. Text the keyword GOLF now to 615-737-1025 for a chance to win a weekend pass for four to enjoy the event in style, including food and drinks, plus a Predators gift pack, including a polo shirt, golf balls, and umbrella. Text GOLF now to 615-737-1025 and enter to win. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing the NFL Draft, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Sam on the text line says, if the Falcons take Kyle Pitts, would y'all be interested in trading for Hayden Hurst? The Falcons would probably be looking to move him because of their cap situation. Say our 4th to get Hurst and a 6th. So if Atlanta hangs on to the number 4 pick and they end up taking Kyle Pitts, would Hayden Hurst be somebody you're interested in if you're the Titans? He is only 27 years old. I think disappointing is probably a fair way to describe his season last year with Atlanta. Would that be a route you'd be interested in if you were the Titans and John Robinson?
So all these moves where you're adding salary, you know, just it's just like Julio Jones. Yeah, they're in cap trouble. There are teams that are in worse cap trouble than the Titans. But, again, we're talking about a team that just gutted its secondary, let its number two receiver and really good tight end walk, cut its right tackle. So that's my long way of saying heck no.
I mean, Hayden Hurst was brought in to replace Austin Hooper, who they lost to the Cleveland Browns. I mean, he's okay. 56 catches, 571 yards, 6 touchdowns in an Atlanta offense that was good on some occasions. Their defense is absolutely atrocious. So, look, I don't know what's going to end up happening with him. I would say it's unlikely that the Titans execute a trade like that.
You need low-cost laborers. You need to draft people who can come in and help you and don't cost a lot. Like, there's just really not in the free agent world or the trade world of people who are on bigger deals. It's basically a non-starter unless you're talking really low-cost free agents.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben text in, which corner will provide us the best insurance policy in case Fulton isn't starter material and or can't stay healthy again? I'm not confident at all in what I saw last year from Christian Fulton. It's interesting. Like, that's why in my little mock draft, I took two corners pretty early. Like, I think third and fourth round, I took a cornerback. And I'm not saying that's the route the Titans will go or should go, but it is interesting. Like, you've got Janoris Jenkins, who I think is a good player. He's 33. I mean, that can change on you in a hurry. I like Christian Fulton's skill set. We haven't seen it at the NFL level. So, cornerback's going to have to be, in my opinion, a pretty high priority. And if I'm the Titans, I'm probably drafting more than one. Now, I'm not saying you got to do it in the top 100 where you draft more than one, but I'm probably in this draft going more than one pick at cornerback.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I disagree with the assessment of Fulton. I can't think of last year at any point saying, boy, that guy is overmatched or he's not going to be any good. He certainly had some bad moments out there, but it was just such a small glimpse of him. And I think he was out there enough to see the guy has speed. I mean, he can run. I don't think there's any question the Titans did what they did because of money, but they don't do it to that extent if they don't think that guy's capable of coming in and playing.
Yeah.
So the insurance is for maybe other people. You know, like Kevin Johnson is a guy I would rather have as a depth guy on my roster than Christian Fulton. To answer the question, I will say that we talked earlier about Caleb Farley. If you're worried about that, you know, Caleb Farley, he may have the highest ceiling of these corners or right up there, but he may not even be ready to go by camp, which what does that mean for his season as a rookie? Probably isn't great. So if you're thinking about just this year, who can come in and help you the most, if we're going to discount Surtain and Horn because they're going too high, I mean, I think a guy like Greg Newsome is a really good option. The guy can play. But Asante Samuel, as you mentioned it last segment, he's another guy who I think could be really good in the NFL.
I'm curious to see if Newsom's going to be there at 22 because I think the Pro Football Focus mock had his average pick at like 22.5 or something like that, and he's right kind of on that edge when you look at the mock drafts, whether it's coming from McShay or Kuiper or Brugler, any of these guys. He's kind of right there on the edge in that neighborhood with the Titans. He, to me, seems like one of those guys where if you're a team maybe like Buffalo or like New Orleans or whoever looking for a cornerback, like I think, to your point, Newsom's a pretty good player. I think he could be a candidate, too, where somebody, if they really like him, you trade up, try to grab him before the Titans get there at 22. You got to keep that in mind for John Robinson, too.
Yeah, no doubt. And Newsom's interesting because I think he fits – the mold, and I think that he has everything you're looking for. There is a fair criticism that, you know, he didn't really get some of the matchups that you would hope a guy would have in the Big Ten. You know, the durability concerns are there. Brugler brought that up. He's had various things that he missed at least 3 games in each of his 3 college seasons. So sometimes you look at a guy like that and say, is he going to hold up in this league? Here's one. I'm again reading from the Beast, Brugler, as I did yesterday, as we talked about Schiatica.
Yes.
But stringy muscle tone is one of his knocks on Newsom.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Stringy muscle tone.
I guess he's just not cut up enough.
Not defined enough.
He's a little bit too skinny. You know, I don't know. I mean, he's got good. You know, the guy's 6'1", 192. But yeah, you never know. Brugler digs in on this stuff, man. But yeah, he projects him as a press man, NFL starter, as a rookie, and that sounds good.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ron text in. Are the Titans going to address the backup quarterback position, or are they just going to use Woodside as the backup? I would rather have veteran experience to back up Tannehill.
Well, again, no. I mean, all these things where, like, can they go get this guy or – I mean, that I think that ship has sailed on the veteran side, right?
I would think so. I mean, there's going to be another round of free agency coming up.
So who would be the
– But I don't know who – I mean
– Because we've talked about Alex Smith.
Yeah.
So who would be – because that's the only way to me that – like you're addressing it where you absolutely could feel better than Woodside would be a veteran who has at least demonstrated some success in the NFL. But, I mean, based on what they've done, I don't think they can afford that.
I don't think so either. And then also, I mean, you do have DeShone Kizer on the roster. How do you feel about him? I know he's not really a veteran. He's 25 years old and – You know, he got thrown into the fire his first year at Cleveland, really hasn't done anything besides that. But, I mean, I would be interested to know how the Titans feel about DeShone Kizer. If it came down to it, would you be comfortable putting him in the game? I don't know. I mean, I think he's got talent. Now, you come in your first year with that Cleveland team, I mean, good luck. And he went 0-15 that year, but, I mean, good luck with that roster and that situation in Cleveland.
He was bad, but they were so bad.
Yeah.
And people give up quickly on quarterbacks. So it's interesting that, you know, they obviously think they have something with him. So maybe camp could be quite a Woodside Kizer battle.
Yeah.
But does that make you feel good? No. I don't think you're going to have a backup quarterback this year.
Who was the battle last year? Trevor Siemian? Trevor Siemian and Woodside?
And remember when they brought Siemian, it was like, oh, sorry, Logan.
He's the backup.
Step aside. And then I remember the first day, I was like, yeah, he's not as good as Logan Woodside. He's pretty bad.
Trevor Siemian.
Yeah.
But remember when they picked him up, it was like, oh, look, this guy started in Denver.
Yeah.
This guy started with the Broncos.
Now he's selling cars.
I don't know why we're not comfortable with Logan Woodside. He's thrown one pass that I've seen, and it was beautiful. Fake punt right where you needed to put it. So far, so good for Logan Woodside.
For whatever it's worth, and it's probably not worth a lot. I remember Woodside's first year. And I thought he was pretty bad in practice, and he has improved a ton.
Yeah.
Now, does that make you feel like he's going to come into a game or start a couple games, give you a chance to win? Probably not. But
who do you feel that way about?
Yeah. I mean, you have to pay for that. And I'm like, so who out there is still available? Like, is Brissett? Did Brissett get picked up by somebody? I mean, he's going to be, you know, that's too much. That's too much cost. I mean, I'm looking around. You know, Colt McCoy.
He's with the Dolphins.
Or Brissett's with the Dolphins.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really no one. I mean, you want to go middle rounds if you love like a Kellen Mond or something.
Yeah,
I like Kellen Mond. Do I feel it? Would I feel any better about rookie Kellen Mond coming in and doing what you're asking Woodside to do? No, not really.
I don't think I'm sacrificing a tight end or defensive lineman to go get a quarterback that you have no idea whether or not he's ever going to start for you.
Nor am I. And honestly, and a lot of teams are in this position. Tannehill gets hurt, you're basically punting.
You can go get Blaine Gabbert again.
Is he out there?
AJ McCarron? RG3? There you go.
McCarron? Cincinnati? Right? Was that his last place?
Houston. He's a backup last year.
But he was with Cincinnati for many years.
Yeah.
Started a playoff game for them.
That's right. My God. See? I mean, he's done it.
Playoff experience, baby. Bring him in as the backup quarterback.
There are very few good answers at QB2. And, again, list me the teams that feel great about their QB2 situation.
Ron says the Patriots are going to get rid of Cam Newton and get Garoppolo, so maybe we can get Cam Newton. I don't think they're getting rid of Cam Newton.
No.
Yeah, Ryan Porth would love that.
Porth says no.
Absolutely not.
I don't think they're getting rid of Cam Newton.
I don't think so either.
I mean, why would you sign him?
He's and I'm sure they'd like to upgrade. But
sure.
In the meantime, he's the transitional guy. He's the bridge QB.
When we come back, we'll get back into the Nashville Predators. A tough one last night against the Florida Panthers. They were dominated in that game. What does it mean moving forward? And what could it mean about a potential playoff matchup as well? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Predators led this game 4-3 after two, but the Panthers came up with four third-period goals, and Spencer Knight, who just came in to start the third period, will get credit for the victory.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, I don't think that's a game we're very proud of. We've been moving in the right direction in a lot of games lately, and tonight I think we took a step back. I think this group obviously is disappointed in the way we played in front of our goaltender. He gave us a chance to win, and it didn't come through, but we need to move on. We need to take some things. We need to learn from it, move on, and we have the biggest game of our year coming up.
It was a rough one last night for the Nashville Predators. They fall 7-4 at the hands of the Florida Panthers. Florida puts up 55 shots on goal last night, and they skate away with a 7-4 victory. And the standings are now as such. The Predators remain in fourth place in the Central Division with 56 points. Dallas also loses yesterday 5-1 to the Carolina Hurricanes. They are in fifth place with 54 points. Two games in hand still on the Predators. They'll play one of those games tomorrow coming up against the Tampa Bay Lightning. So was not a good showing at all for the Predators last night. I guess the silver lining if you're a Preds fan today is you did get some help from Carolina last night and you're still ahead of the Stars in the standings. So hoping for more help tomorrow from the Lightning if you're a Predators fan. Joe, it was just a game last night where really from start to finish in that game, Florida was completely in control. And it sounds weird to say that because the Predators were winning the game 4-3. After the first two periods, but Florida spent most of that game in the offensive zone, and the Predators really didn't have an answer for it.
Yeah, it was really quite a dominant two games overall for Florida, with some great stretches from the Preds. But boy, last night it looked like maybe they were just going to do this incredible theft of a game after two periods, and it would have been UC Saros leading the charge.
It looked like a classic rope-a-dope coming for the Predators last night after the first two periods,
and then it's like it all just sort of collapsed on them in the third period. It's like, oh no, and you're talking about being dominated by a really good team. And just back to the question of, so I believe I'm correct here, 5-16-1, is that right?
Yep.
Against the top three, and obviously a much better record against everybody else, which has the Preds in position to be in the playoffs. But does this team have what it takes to push any of those teams in a playoff series?
Well, and if you can get down the stretch here, I mean, Florida clinches a playoff spot last night. Tampa Bay clinches one as well. Carolina did the other night. So those three are locked. I mean, they're going to be the top three teams. We'll see what the order ends up being. But if you're the Predators, like, if you're a Predators fan, does this two-game stretch against Florida influence the way you feel about a potential first-round matchup? If you had to choose between Carolina or Tampa Bay or Florida to be your first-round matchup, who would you choose? That's the subject of today's poll question at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. If the Preds make the playoffs, who would you prefer to be their first-round opponent? Right now, 55% of the vote saying the Florida Panthers, 35% going with Tampa Bay, and just 10% with the Carolina Hurricanes. So Florida, even though they thoroughly dominated the Predators last night, still leading the way in terms of the opponent Predators fans would most like to see in the first round.
Well, a little surprised by that because a lot of times, you know, these polls are usually asked right after something happens that would maybe influence the answer. And I know I would have picked Florida before the last 2 days, and I'm switching to Tampa Bay very reluctantly. And it's almost laughable to say you would pick Tampa Bay. But I do think that the team that just won the cup sometimes can be vulnerable, very hard to repeat, and maybe you get that team early, and you've had some success against them recently. It's all flimsy because they could sweep the Preds right the heck out of the playoffs with, you know, with extreme prejudice.
Yes.
But I think I'd go that way over the other two.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, I find it interesting that people believed we were going to get swept by Florida this week. We pull off a win and get 2 points, and everyone's acting like the sky is falling because we lost the second game. Yeah, I think it's more the fashion in which you lost the game.
It's more the actual 120 minutes of hockey and how a Nashville team that has done a lot of things to turn things around is playing really well, is hard to play against, is getting great goaltending, still looks that overmatched for that much of two games. It wasn't just, hey, you got a split. I mean, if we could go back to the beginning and someone said they got a split, it's like, okay, that sounds pretty good. But watch the games. And they were absolutely overwhelmed for too much of those games.
I mean, they gave up 95 shots on goal in two games. 95 shots on goal the Panthers put up in two games. Like, it sounds crazy to say this because he gave up 6 goals. Thought Ustaros was pretty good last night. Gave up 6 goals. I don't know what they were doing in front of him last night. And look, you've got to give credit to Florida. They're a really good team. Barkov's great. Huberto was outstanding last night. Had 5 points in the game. Sam Bennett has come from Calgary to Florida, and he's playing at a really high level right now. So, certainly, they were really good. They made a lot of plays and forced the Predators' hand. I think the Predators are very good in the defensive zone. I didn't think the investment level was there where it needed to be. And when that happens, and you factor in you're playing against a really good team as well, sometimes it's going to look ugly. And it looked ugly last night for the Predators, even though, like I said, they gave up 6 goals. I thought Saros was pretty good. Like, it literally,
I thought he was better than pretty good.
It literally could have been 12-4 last night.
Oh, so I thought Saros was excellent.
Yeah.
Laugh at that if you want. But, again, look at the goals. They were terrible in the defensive zone, and they couldn't get the forecheck going. That's been the formula. They could not establish it, and they were chasing all night and late, and maybe it's a fatigue thing. I mean, that's fine, you know, back-to-back. But, again, Florida was on a back-to-back too, so – I just think that's a better hockey team when it comes down to it, with some guys that they just have a real problem dealing with. But, you know, the other two teams, that's true of them too. It just feels to me like the matchup wise, crazy as it may sound, Tampa Bay may be just a little bit better.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Chris text in. Last night was a perfect example of a team's stars rising to the top and pulling their team across when they need it. Barkov and Huberto for the Panthers were awesome last night. They dominated the Predators, and the Predators don't seem to have anyone who can respond in that manner. I mean, usually you'd look to Roman Josi. I mean, he was okay last night. Defensively, it wasn't very good. I mean, obviously, Philip Forsberg, when he comes back, is going to be a big part of this too. But to Chris's point, like, there's nobody the Predators have that's Alexander Barkov, and there's nobody they really have that's Huberto either. I mean, those two were at a completely different level than anybody else on the ice last night.
I hit it. I think it's an equipment malfunction. You know, I'll invoke Jared, who is our in studio guest today. Big boy forward. It's one of his friends, and it's there are times when you're like, they don't have that.
Yeah.
So how do you get that? How do you get one of those guys?
Just wait on Elie Tolvanen to go past that Forsberg floor, and then he'll be there.
That's true. I mean, if Forsberg is the floor, he's going to be awfully good.
That's right.
If that's the worst case scenario for Elie Tolvanen, how many career goals does Forsberg have?
Well, I don't know.
He's got a lot.
He's off the top of my head.
Fifth in all-time scoring in Predators history. Yes. That's the floor.
Yeah.
Well, then maybe that's the answer. There's a guy I didn't see a lot last night. I didn't see much from Tolvanen.
No. Of course, I mean, last night you didn't see much from anybody. But, yes, I haven't seen much from Tolvanen in the last couple of games. So, definitely some work to do there. Special teams, it's going to have to get better.
Penalty kill was
not good last night.
Was bad the same day. I mean, yesterday I think two things I said was penalty kill's been amazing, and also Gudbranson hasn't been too bad.
Yeah. That didn't go well last night.
I said some really good stuff yesterday on the show.
See you, Tika.
Put that in a times capsule.
Let's go. When we come back, we'll be joined by Predators forward Matt Duchesne. We'll look back at the series against Florida. Look ahead to a massive game coming up against the Dallas Stars on Saturday. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. scheduled to be joined shortly by Predators forward Matt Duchene. So looking forward to that conversation coming up with him. Joe, let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Got a texter that says, not blaming Saros, and it may not have changed the outcome, but Hines needs to give him a break because Florida goalie change worked wonders for them in the third period. I mean, the Panthers' goalie change worked. Predators also didn't have the puck to really test Spencer Knight all that much. And also Bobrovsky, I mean, he gave up 4 goals on 17 shots.
Right. I mean, it's you've got a team dominating another team, and that team is losing 4-3.
Right.
So, goalie change makes sense. If you're the Preds at that point, you're ahead 4-3 in a game you're dominating, you are fanning your goalie and feeding him grapes in between the second and third periods, and you're not even considering taking him out of the game. So,
trying to make sure he's hydrated.
Now, I will say, yeah. You know, give him – hey, you know what? Gabranson, give him your Gatorade, okay? He gets two. Look, I said it yesterday. I thought that was a good game for Pekka Rinne to start because of the amount of work Saros had. It was had to have been an exhausting game Monday for him.
Wonder what last night was like for him.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's got 3 days off. He needs like 3 weeks after that. But I don't think that changes the outcome either. I mean, the way Saros has been playing, and again, the way I believe he played last night, you know, if you put Pekka Rinne in there cold and under the same circumstances, it's probably more than 7-4.
I don't care who you put in goal last night. You could go back to any goaltender in the history of the league last night. If the Predators played the way they did in front of them, it's not going to end well. I mean, 55 shots on goal. I mean, it's not just the quantity of the shots, but it was the quality, too. Like, you're giving up really good looks, and sometimes Saros was there to make the saves, and sometimes he wasn't. I mean, even the game Monday where you went 4-1, you still gave up a ton of quality looks. Like, they did not play well defensively against this Panthers team. And again, Florida does that to a lot of people, so you have to give them credit for what they're able to generate out there. But I do think the last two games, if you're John Hines, you're looking over the tape of those two games and saying, man, we're going to have to be a whole lot better defensively from everyone if you're going to get in the playoffs coming down the stretch here. Like, you can't consistently give up that many quality looks and expect to find any modicum of success moving forward.
So do you think it's more guys getting outside the system, just not having the level of commitment you need, or just that the Panthers are so good that they force you outside yourself?
I think a lot of it is Florida. They force you outside of yourself. Like, you know, the Predators in the second period on Monday, I think it's really when they got exposed. But Saros was there to make the saves. And, you know, you look at the underlying numbers and the slot shots that they got on Monday, it was a lot. They put up a lot of quality attempts, and Saros was there to answer the bell. He was to a certain degree last night, but you give up, like, 35 quality scoring chances, they're going to find their way in the back of the net eventually, and they did last night. Like, I can think of maybe one last night from Saros where I'd be like, okay, I'd like to see you make that save. And I think it was the one in the third period that maybe put them up 5-3 or whatever, or 5-4, whatever it was, Vetrano's goal from the left circle.
Right, like, he's alone, and you got a clear view of the puck.
Why is he alone? Right. Why is nobody there?
Yeah, that's the one. I agree. That's the one. It's like, well, if your goalie's going to bail you out of a game, he's got to stop that. But it's still an absolute left circle, you know, no one around. You can see it, but that doesn't mean, you know, if it's a good shot, that's tough. Everything else, you know, you had the bad luck on the, I think Huberto was trying to pass it.
Yeah.
And it goes off Yossi's stick, goes 5-hole.
Yeah. That's Barkov, you know? Yeah.
That was Barkov, yeah. I mean, those guys were just – they were all over them. But everything else was like, you know, power play, just Saros is trying to dive from one side to the other, and it's just – you're done.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texts in, you think Hines gives Pekka the start on Saturday to give Saros more rest after this back-to-back?
Oh, my gosh, no.
I would say there is a 0.0% chance that UC Saros is not going to be starting on Saturday.
I mean, he's getting 3 days now.
Yeah.
He's been the best goaltender in the league for the last 6 weeks.
The biggest game of the year. You're starting UC Saros.
Yeah.
Now, it is going to be interesting to see. Like, I would assume they're not doing anything today. Like, there's going to be no practice. If I was the Predators, I'm not even, like, meeting today. Just go do your thing. I'd probably even get the coaching staff the day off. Go do whatever you need to do. Come back at it tomorrow, and you can do some light work and get ready for the game coming up on Saturday. But if I'm used to, like, I'm the Predators, I might give Soros Thursday off too and just be like, yeah, you don't need to be here. Just come in, get you some shots on Friday, and then get ready to go on Saturday. But outside of an injury that we didn't know about or we don't know about, there's no way Soros isn't playing on Saturday.
Yeah, zero. Zero. It's not a – last night was I thought it was definitely worth trying. Again, I don't think it changes the outcome. I do think – actually, it's funny because I was like, boy, Soros, is he going to be up to it after that night? And he was. It was the rest of the team that wasn't. But, again, that's just not an excuse when you're playing the same team back-to-back.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a text that said – or this is coming from Mike in the borough. Tolvanen was terrible defensively, standing around watching two goals in the third period. It wasn't just him. The forwards played a bad game defensively all around. I did, and I think the goal we were just talking about, Tolvanen's kind of just sitting there watching. And again, it's hard to single out one guy last night because I thought pretty much to a man outside of Soros, it did not go well last night, and there was not much attention to detail, not much in terms of the commitment that they played with. They never got to their forecheck, really, in that game, and Florida deserves credit for that. But I think a good teaching moment for John Hines to kind of play that film and say, hey, forwards, you see all this action that you've been doing in the defensive zone as of late and how much of a difference that's made in the overall team play? You got totally away from that against Florida, and if you do that, you're going to look bad.
I mean, when's the last time John Hines seemed kind of ticked after a game? I mean, again, he's very, very even keel, but
he was
not
happy last night.
Yeah, it was obvious that he was unhappy, basically said Soros is the one guy who didn't deserve this fate, right? So that tells you right there that just from without even going through the film yet, he saw a lot of things he didn't like. And it's surprising that that happens right now after so much talk, so much success, confidence, building on it, and the forwards being more defensively responsible has been such a big part of this. The forecheck, yes. The fourth line, yes. Soros, number one. But that's been a big thing. The forwards in the defensive zone being better. And then they just aren't for a night. But I just think it's some of it is just, oh, the puck's over here. Up, we're late. Up, we're scrambling. We're chasing. And now you're done.
We are still efforting Matt Duchene. We are trying to get in touch with him. So we'll have that for you when we are able to. The Predators, it's not a total disaster from last night, but it's interesting. Number one, like we heard last week, Forsberg apparently close or getting closer. Could he be available on Saturday? I mean, you talk about a boost. Getting him back for that Dallas game, that would be huge. Like, I don't know where you put him right now. I don't know where he slots in. Obviously, when he's ready to play, he's going to be in there. I don't know exactly where that would be, but I'm fascinated. Whenever they get back on the ice, probably tomorrow, I'm interested to see if Forsberg's a part of it because they need him back in a hurry. Like, you're coming down, you've got five games left. You need number nine back in there.
If you could pick an injured player, I think it's got to be Forsberg, but if it was that or both defensemen right now that they're missing, what would you pick?
Oh, man. I mean, I would still pick Forsberg because he's, I think, that good and that much of a game breaker. But right now, how much of a difference could an Alex Carrier make for this group right now or a Dante Favreau? Like, I get it. Dante Favreau, not the most popular guy right now, and he has certainly made his fair share of mistakes this year. But go out there and watch that third pair last night of Ben Harper and Eric Goodbranson and tell me this team doesn't miss Dante Favreau because they do. They need him back in there quickly.
Yeah. I've kind of felt like Forsberg has been, you know, it makes sense that if they talk about him last week for this week, that now you have more days and he would come back, and that would, you would think, be a huge lift emotionally for this team too to get him back. But all three of those guys can make a difference. And when you talk about this team's prospects in the playoffs, don't discount that. I mean, those three guys – if Arvidsson's not a big deal, that's the next thing to look at. you know, then all three of those guys could make a difference in a series against one of those three teams.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, hopefully Arvidsson's not too bad and he can come back and be healthy. Like, I think, you know, outside of really the last two games, he started to really come on with his game. He's gotten back to the speed game part of it as well. So that's going to be important. Hopefully he can come back and not miss a significant amount of time, because what you can have happen is Forsberg's still not ready to go, and then now maybe you're without Arvidsson as well heading into this game against Dallas as well. So going to be interesting to see what happens on that front. We'll be right back, wrap up the final hour coming up next on Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. We will have Matt Duchesne to begin the 9 o'clock hour. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.